quick beckonance here, setting it up for the Talking Earth, and we are hearing from Clan Cayman in a track called Encuentro Cercano. And before that, we heard from Zazu, Bikai, and CY1 in a track called Mi Pasilla. Laurel Halo before that, and the first track on the second side of their LP, Infinite Music, and that's a tribute to Lamont Young, and we heard a track off of that, and I think the track was called Infinite Music, if my scribblings are correct. And at the top of the set, we heard from Nurse with Wound and A Missing Sense from 1986. This has been A Different Nature. We're here every Monday night from 8 till 10 with the finest in experimental, avant-garde, and outre sounds for your listening pleasure. And so stick around for the Talking Earth coming up right here on KBOO Portland.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Portland Folk Music Society's concert season, which this month features the Kathy Kallick Bluegrass Band, October 19th, 7:30 p.m., at the Reedwood Friends Church in Southeast Portland. Kathy Kallick is an award-winning singer-songwriter, having received a Grammy and international bluegrass music accolades. Her five-piece band features more IBMA winners, including local fiddler Annie Staninetz, a former Emerging Artist of the Year. Portland Folk Music Society concerts in November will bring the Honey Whiskey Trio and Legends of the Celtic Harp with Patrick Ball in a special pre-holiday program. PFS presents concerts monthly, now through next May. For more information, go to the website, kboo.fm, and look on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Your investment in community radio can go on with a planned gift to KBOO. Consider adding KBOO to your will or add KBOO as a beneficiary to your insurance and bank accounts. You can change your mind anytime if your circumstances change. But recognizing KBOO along with your family and friends in your legacy giving is a powerful commitment to media justice. Let us know if you add KBOO to your plans. We'd like to thank you for your considerate future gift. Contact us at 503-231-8032 or email development@kboo.fm to notify us of your plans.
Hi, you're listening to KBOO, and this is Talking Earth. And I'm Amanda Hellstrom White.
And I'm Sophia Hellstrom White.
And tonight we have
our three readers, Andrea Gonzalez, Grace Baddock, and Nastasia Minto. They are recent additions to the live reading scene in Portland, and this is Amanda and I's first night of hosting Talking Earth.
And we are so glad that you are with us, and we're going to get started by having Grace read some of her work.
This first one is called Take Me to the Water. Take me to the water that nourishes the body and soul by spray and waves, the rushing whoosh as the water approaches, the subtle hiss as the water recedes. Fill my lungs with the salty, humid air. Let my feet sink into the sand, slowly, slowly. Life lurks all around, hidden to the naked eye. Living life by cycles of tides, dictated by the pool and movement of the moon. Take me to the water where it rushes over rocky cliffs into pools far below, where the force of it carves into stones, moves them down and down the watery way, wearing and weaving layers and waves into granite and limestone and sandstone and basalt. Take me to the water which is clean and life-giving, not tainted by chemicals or lead, where children do not fear what sickness lies in wait for them. Take me to the water, that source and sustainer of life. This next one is untitled. You said to me, we all should just live our truths, just be who you are meant to be. I started to tell you about the long conditioning of shame from loving parents, well-intentioned teachers, ancient doctrines. If only it were that easy to banish shame like we banish boogeymen as children. Instead, it takes an unwinding, a peeling back of layers. The reason I cling to a hurt is not because it is the greatest hurt I've ever experienced. Rather, it is because it harkens to previous ones, old wounds that reopen. Oddly, there is comfort of familiarity in shame. I do not know the other side, that of liberation. I only know glimpses of it, and that of slipping and sliding back into the layers of shame. You said again, we all should just live our truths, just be who you are meant to be.
Thanks, Grace. And then our next reader
is the wonderful Nastasia Minto.
Well, thank you. My piece is called Mother May I. Mother, may I not carry your load because it's too heavy for me? You see, I've been trying to carry this load for as long as I can remember. Please give me permission to be free. Mother, may I address the root causes of my fears and insecurities, the nights I wanted to be held, but no one helped me, the days I wanted to be wanted, but even you didn't want me. Mother, may I lay down my burdens at your feet instead of you burdening me? Closed toes, socks too tight, cutting off my oxygen supply to my feet, I may die because I'm buried in your burden so deep. Mother, may I lay my head on your shoulders or across your knees as you rock me to sleep, instead of laying in bed crying at night, clutching the pillow so tight to console me? Mother, may I tell you of all the nights I kind of wish you were dead. At least then I wouldn't have to worry myself to sleep, wondering who's going to be the next person to call and confirm you're really dead. Mother, may I share about how long I desired to be a child, ran away from home to home to find a place to call my own, only to find I was still alone, having to be the adult before I was even grown. Mother, may I share with you a confession? When I was 19, I dated a 37-year-old woman who asked if I was experimenting to gain some lessons. Ouch. I guess she thought I was too young to love someone and needed someone else's blessings. Mother, may I ask of the deep scars that engulf you? Defense is so thick, it's hard to love you. Lack of trust of yourself and others, sometimes it's hard to hug you without you crying. Mother, may I say I saw so much of myself in you, that's why I was afraid. Afraid to be anything like you. I couldn't let it be true. I had to run away from the DNA that created me because it's mostly you. Mother, may I say that even in all of this, behind all your scars, in the weight of all your burdens, I still see your pure heart, your desire to be more than what was offered to you, but not knowing how to reach it. Mother, may I love on you in a way that is pure and true, so that when someone else tries to love you in that way, you would be more open to receiving it than to feel like you've been deceived by it because of your previous scars. Mother, may I be honest to say I love you with a depth I've never felt before. Maybe because I feel like you're my child instead of the other way around. You have taught me these things I've learned, and I have not learned them anywhere else. And for that, I deeply love and cherish you. Mother, may I be granted the permission to be free. Free of all the worry and anxiety. Free to have that childlike innocence and even laugh without feeling like I need to be more mature. Free from calls saying she's overdosed only for me to say, are you sure? Because mother, I deeply love and cherish you. Mother, may I say that my heart would be completely broken if something were to happen to you. Because even in my burdened state, you still have so much to offer this place, and I desire to see your potential and greatness shine through. Because mother, I deeply love and cherish you. But mother, may I be your child from here on out, because now I'm tired. Mother, may I, please? And my next piece is called Blackness. I hated my blackness and all the trouble it seemed to cause. Pause. I can't have work or wear this type of shirt because I'm black. I'm not wealthy enough to have my black south face facing north. Am I chasing after unrealistic dreams? It seems that everything comes in waves and phases. I must time it out right or I'll miss my chance. This society is a dance and fuck, I don't know how to dance. Pause. I put on my pants that fit a certain way. I wear my shirt tucked in because I should appear a certain way. I speak and enunciate all my words so that they don't know I'm black. Pause. It's a fact. We have a million things on our mind, trying to navigate through space and time. We thought our ancestors fought, but we're fighting the same injustice, just a different time. Let's spare them. But no one ever spared the people of color, outlining and tracing the silhouettes of everything we created to remake it and say it's all yours. I heard that's a common thing they do. Steal from other people and make it look like it's theirs with false proof. Black. It took me years to embrace my blackness, face my blackness, and really appreciate every curve and dimension. But did I mention the state and the value my blackness holds in this place? Surrounded by my ancestral plains, they bring great truths and laid out carbon proofs for me to navigate the system. I really missed them. But I know that their spiritual being brings wisdom and insight in every very prominent way. So, I will stay the course and continue to light my fire, lifting it higher to go back and rewire our people and their mental state. Deleting the false narrative we've been given for so long. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps, but damn, none of us have boots on. Sing a survival song as the day carries on. We're taking this back. From the way we sing to how we do our hair, let's pass the torch and allow ourselves to catch on fire. Never detouring from the original proof as we embrace our blackness, our truth, blackness.
And our next reader is Andrea Gonzalez.
I'm going to be reading a short story titled Butchered. I was working the deli counter at Lemon's Foods on a Thursday evening, and a fussy customer caught me at a bad time. 30 minutes later, that customer was dead. Her body was found hanging halfway out of a dumpster behind Lemon's. The blood-red bottoms of her Louis Vuittons caught the eye of a passerby who reported it to the police. And now you may think you know where this story is headed, but you are probably wrong. Let me start by saying that I do feel bad about what happened. From the little I gathered of the recently deceased, she was a rich, entitled shrew. But she could have kids or something, I don't know. They don't deserve to have a dead mom, even if she was an asshole. Secondly, context here is key. The week before the tragic events, I had been dumped by my boyfriend of 2 years, who was also my manager. He ended things because he was cheating on me with his manager. Naturally, I quit my job in a frenzy of snot, tears, expletive-laden declarations, and coffee tossing. And that is why I landed at Lemon's, wearing a name tag that read, "Hello, my name is Emily," and a plastic hairnet. Next, I'm here to say that everything you have heard about this interaction is probably false. You've got the basic facts right, but as far as I can tell, those facts have been flipped, spun around, thrown over your shoulder, hastily retrieved, and then thrown out the window. The deceased, Kathy, did come into Lemon's at 9:32 p.m. on October 4th. She did walk immediately to the deli counter to retrieve a pound of honey-baked ham. She was wearing a forest green petticoat that stopped at her ankles. She did have a gold watch the size of the sun, and her French manicure was undeniable perfection. She had feathered brown hair like Farrah Fawcett, and she even smelled rich. I don't know how to describe the smell of rich people, but it's like a combination of Chanel No. 5, pine cones, and a fresh coat of paint. I remember clear as day that Kathy yelled to get my attention. "Hey, sweetie, why don't you get off your phone and do your job?" I was flustered. I didn't want to get fired my first week. I couldn't get fired my first week. So sorry, ma'am. How can I help?" "Don't call me ma'am." "Oh, okay, sorry," I responded. "I need a pound of boar's head honey-baked ham, cut thin for sandwiches." "No problem." I went into the meat window and retrieved the ham. "Your hair is poking out of your hairnet, by the way," Oh, sorry. I stopped to shove loose hair back into the plastic net. God, don't touch your hair with the gloves that you're about to use to hold my food. That's disgusting. Oh, shoot, yeah. I'll grab a new pair of gloves. My heart rate was beginning to increase. This lady was being a real bee. It was taking everything in my body not to lash out. Honestly, I felt like a tea kettle, hot and getting hotter, liable to blow at any moment. But I remained professional. I could hear her muttering insults under her breath while I grabbed a new pair of gloves and disposed of the contaminated ones, but I stayed cool, calm, and collected. I took the ham over to the slick silver slicer and cut a piece of test ham to ensure its thinness was to her liking. Does this look good? I asked, smiling. Are you serious? I wasn't sure how to respond. Yes. Do you need it thinner? Of course I need it thinner. You could win a frisbee contest with that thing. No problem. I'll cut it thinner. You should really stop saying no problem. It implies that I'm causing an issue. It's bad service etiquette. This time I just glanced back at her, flames alit behind my irises. I turned back to the meat cutter, my chest getting tighter. I handled the machine more aggressively this time. If there was anyone else at the counter, I would have told them to take over, but the place was less populated than the surface of Mars. I held up another slice to Kathy. Does this work? Wow, are you new or something? Actually, yes, I am. Oh, honey, if you don't start figuring things out soon, you might be an old employee quicker than you'd think. I stared back at her, heart pounding so fast it sounded like bad EDM. Actually, that's not true. All EDM is bad. I want it thin enough that you can just barely see through it. And if you think that's thin, you should probably make it thinner just in case. She was becoming very pleased with herself. Make it as thin as you are thick, and we should be good. I turned away from Kathy as tears automatically started to stream down my cheeks like someone had turned on a faucet and I didn't have the tools to turn it off. I walked to the back counter, and yes, I grabbed a knife. And yes, I stabbed the chunk of ham with it. Some say aggressively, I say with the appropriate amount of force. Now I understand, in retrospect, I should not have done that. It just made me feel strong again for a second. It was a release of rage, but I was never going to hurt her. Anyways, I kept my back turned as I was openly crying, and I heard Kathy say, "Wow, you have some issues, and I don't have time to deal with this." I pulled the knife from the ham, and when I turned around, she was gone. Like she had never existed. If only that had been the case. And that's when I made the stupid decision to leave and get some air. I was delirious. The world was spinning around me. I thought for sure I was going to get fired after Kathy inevitably complained to a manager, and I also got my gross salty tears all over the honey-baked ham. That shit is a hot commodity at a high-end grocery store like lemons. With all these thoughts zooming around me like a cloud of angry wasps, I didn't even realize I still had the knife in my hands. It wasn't until I was sitting in my car, weeping my eyes out, that I noticed. I tossed it into the back seat, thinking I'd wash it at home and bring it back to the store if I ever decided to set foot in there again. When Chief Dickwad of the Williamsburg Police Department asked me why I took the knife, I couldn't really answer. I said, "I don't know, I just did." He laughed at me. He laughed in my face. In fact, he laughed at most of the things I said. This big, fat man with caterpillar eyebrows and a shiny bald spot looked at me like I was a juicy sirloin. He had the camera footage. He had me the previous week yelling throwing scalding hot coffee over my idiot ex and his mistress, and now he had me crying hysterically, stabbing a piece of ham, and walking out of Lemons right behind Kathy, wielding a weapon. He had me, period. It didn't help that as I walked out, I had apparently muttered something to myself. I likely said something along the lines of, "Keep it together, Emily." But the customer who walked past could have sworn I said, "Keep your eye on her, Emily." Which, through the world's most interactive game of telephone, turned into, "Kill her, enemy." Oh, yeah. And the press, they ate it up. The butcher, they called me. Within 24 hours of Chief Dickwad getting his disgusting laughter spit all over my face, my story was on the cover of every major magazine, newspaper, sleuth blog, and celebrity Twitter account. Even Mindy Kaling threw me under the bus. All of a sudden, a very regrettable Halloween photo of me dressed as a zombie Amy Winehouse, fake stabbing my friend in a George Bush mask, can be found in every dark crevice of the internet. And soon after that, Donald Trump is holding this exact photo up to every citizen of the country, talking about how mental illness is killing America. And the most terrifying part of it all, I didn't touch a hair on that woman's perfectly feathered head. And I don't know who did. But it's a lot easier to hold your focus on the raging woman and turn her into a caricature. A blood-stained Betty Boop doing a jig for her captivated audience. Everyone loves to read about the butcher, but no one cares to know Emily Gray, the girl with the big smile who made a mean Moscow mule and who every year for her mom's birthday sent her a 3-page letter recalling cherished memories. And now I'm sitting here in my jail cell that I don't deserve, wondering why we are so entertained by an angry woman. I wonder if it's because female rage is not truly frightening. No one sees a woman like me on the street in the middle of the night and crosses to the other side. The 5-second loop of me stabbing that piece of stupid ham was viewed on YouTube over 19 million times. So I am in a jail cell, I guess, because I let my emotions be seen. I wasn't the sweet, demure lady I should have been. I was a little wild. I was a little sensitive. I demanded attention. And as punishment, I lost my personhood. I lost my name. However, the objective facts remain. Kathy is dead. I am in jail. Kathy's murderer is not in jail. So, at least the butcher's a little safer than the rest of you.
Oh, I have to make a note of how hard it was for all of us to not burst out laughing during all of that. I mean, oh, if only there were video. I think all of us had our hands around our mouth at one point.
And we're going to go back to Grace now.
You have to follow that.
Oh, great, great. Well, this one is called A Change in the Air, so maybe that's appropriate. A change in the air. Can you feel it? I don't mean the changing of summer into autumn. I'm talking about something else entirely. Something big is coming. Hasn't your soul been telling you? The tugging, nagging restlessness, the sense of movement inside. Do you know what it is? Can you imagine what's yet to be? Feel this sense of in-between, deep in your bones. Just feel it. A change is beckoning. How will it manifest? What will outwardly show what's inwardly happening? Change is sure to come, one way or another. The question is, will you be ready when it does? This next one is called Taking Stock. Gather what belongs to you into a pile and choose only the essentials. Remember, some of the things we carry take no space in backpacks or luggage. What do you plan to leave behind? Our time is so short on this planet, and we take nothing with us into the next life. Burn those papers, the letters of love, the entries of longing, the cards of celebration. Those sentiments are imprinted on you in other ways. Look at your shoes. Some are worn from many miles trekked. Some look brand new. Not all will serve you well. Let go of those things that burden you, whether heavy coats of grief, capes of anger, boots of stubbornness. They will slow you down on the journey. When you grow weary, as you inevitably will, let your memories of love guide you to rest. What will help you beat back the encroachment of doubt and insecurity? Do not be afraid of loneliness. It will come and go as any old friend does. Greet it each time with genuine welcome rather than hostility of its presence. Imagine if it didn't appear, how much more alone you would feel.
Up next, Nastasia.
Thank you. This piece is called To the Sassy Librarian. It was minutes after I walked into those doors, I noticed your face. That softness that disclosed the youth in you, but that gentleness that imbued you with grace and light. There's an airiness about your presence, but I approach you cautiously, unaware of the strength that comes with that mysterious beauty behind those wide frames. I refrain from the aggressiveness to ask a million questions, knowing I really only wanted to ask one. But then you look up from your frames and I'm stunned. My tongue stutter over words that usually come with ease. I freeze in your presence. You glance a smile to show those beautiful white teeth and say, "How may I help you?" I think to myself, I'm helpless at this point. Just point me in the direction to find connections with you. That long dress with your cloak barely draping over your shoulders. I should be bolder. I should say how I feel and let it be true. But the librarian is annoyed with me and says, "Please, ma'am, how may I help you? Can you lead me to the self-help memoir type books, please?" She looked in the computer and said, "Okay, 21 through 23. I was really hoping she would lead the way. I was willing to follow. But she put her head back down. "Damn you, librarian. You're supposed to walk these aisles with me, scanning and tracing each perfectly bound book. Our fingers are supposed to meet and greet, and we both laugh shyly. But why me? Why can't I build up the courage to go say my name, ask her name? What a shame." I slowly make my way back to Alkay, looking high and low for a book I knew I wasn't going to find only on the shelf, but she was standing behind the desk. I slowly rest my head on the bookshelf, thinking of ways I could approach the librarian again without coming out of my skin or stuttering over simple words like, "Hi, my name is." I hear a voice say so sweetly, "Have you found what you're looking for?" Oh my God, she speaks to me. My soul leaps out of my skin again. Why did I come out of my skin? I grin. Not really, I said, but maybe I just overlooked the book. She said, "What's the name? I can help you find it." I thought I found it already, but I can't say that to her. As I'm closer to her, I notice those freckles that hide behind those wide frames, thinking it's a shame she tries to cover those up. I'm thinking to myself, why have I come to this place? Sooner than later, she went online. She said it again. "Do you know the name of the book?" I shook my head and said, "I can't remember. I just know it's bright orange and blue." With so much sass in her voice, she said, "Well, that show ain't gonna help you." "No shit, Sherlock," is what I wanted to say, but I kindly looked the other way. "It's okay," I said. "I'll find it another time." Then kindly she said, "Well, what is it about? Maybe we can find it together." My eyebrows raised and wrinkles came across my forehead. She said, "What does it look like?" I said, "I'm just surprised you're still standing here, actually." She smiled. I guess she realized her sassiness, too. We searched each aisle, looking high and low for this orange and blue book. Afraid I was chasing false hopes, so I apologized for making her look. She said, "Well, that's my job, so don't worry about it." As we're walking down aisle 23, I see the book. Like, no, for real. The real book. I pulled it from the shelf. "The Alchemist," I yelled. "The Alchemist." "Shh," she said. "This is a library, remember?" With a big smile on her face. We walked to the front, and I checked out the book for a week. She tore off a piece of paper and wrote something on it, and I slipped it inside the book. I really couldn't help myself, so I knew I had to look. So I slowly opened the front page, anxious to see what she had wrote. Out of the side of my eye, I see her gently pull on her cloak. I turn the paper over, and to my surprise, she says, "Hi, my name is Grace. Here's my number. Text me. I can help you find plenty more books whenever you're ready." And this next one is called You. You take me deep, not just emotionally, physically, spiritually, but all three. You open up my eyes on all three planes, leave me slain, like and higher than a being that I came in as. You know how to make it last as you open up my heart to uncover my past. You tear down walls, break through shells, and peel back the layer that is keeping me from seeing the reflection of you. You see the naked truth straight through like nipples through a wet shirt. Sometimes it hurt, or maybe it's just uncomfortable, but you gently caress each angle, untangle the webs that may be forming around my truth. You know how to undress my mind and close all at the same time. You stimulate every region, it's pleasing. You should know. No, really, you should know. I glow as your physical hands embrace my face to place those lips on mine. Your body reacts to space and time, leaves chills as you caress the small of my spine. You lock legs as our tongue intertwine. You move with the flow, the groove of your body with mine. Lose track of time as you place kisses on my neck, then my breast to make my nipples alert. My hands slide up your skirt to feel that you flow like the ocean's deep. You look at me as my other hand secure your back and fingers gently slide inside. You like the ride, or maybe this position, on top of each other, exposing the naked truth. You bring your body closer, wanting me deeper inside. The moans crescendo through the room. You remove my fingers and grind our clits together like South Georgia weather. You like the deep pressure and don't stop until we both wet the sheets. There is no sleep, only rest breaks and rounds to go. You lay as your body relax from the sweet relief. You begin to run your hands from my chest to my thighs. My eyes and my body react with sweet shivers from your touch. You love that so much as your lips and tongue dip into my ocean so deep. You whisper, she speaks to me, and slurp everything up and slide your tongue inside. I ride the wave so freely as you slide your fingers inside with your tongue flickering my clit. Oh shit, don't make me come so fast. I caress my breasts and hold my breath to release this heavenly flow. I want more. Let us ring true, only to wake up and realize that really there is no you.
Well, that was job well done. So I think we should break into the topical section where we talk more snickering. So that half the topic we were going to discuss was what's it like being a fairly new reader in Portland, and two of our readers actually became involved because of a show Amanda and I hosted called New Poet Challenge. Actually, Andrea was when New Poet Challenge became a section of another reading we were hosting that we just kind of decided to retire from hosting soon afterwards. But Grace, I've known you the longest. Has it been about 2 years?
Yeah, almost 2 years.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's what's been your experience since reading at New Poet Challenge since then? I know you go to a fair amount of readings.
Yeah, well, it's definitely led me to write more. I feel like I was writing pretty intermittently before, but yeah, there's like a new confidence in being able to write and like put my stuff out into the world. So that has allowed me to explore not just poetry, but prose and other forms of writing as well. So, yeah, it's been great to connect to the poetry world in Portland and just kind of share this side of me, which doesn't get to come out very often.
Always nice to hear, because it's always good to, like, explore and find that. Nastasha, how did you get involved with live readings?
Well, first, I did a live reading with Ali Shaw, and we have a group, Sit Down and Shut Up and Write, and they did a show, Stand Up and Read. So that was the first time that I read any of my stuff live. And then for you guys is the Neon yeah. Dream, and Jenny was there. Yeah. And so that was my second time reading.
Oh, nice.
And that's how I got involved in it, and it's just been continuing on.
We didn't quite catch your live reading birth, but almost. And Andrea, since reading at Neon Dream, you've been doing, they're called Story Slams? Or?
Yes.
I want to hear all about that.
Yeah, it's been great. I went to my first Story Slam event, which was put on by an organization called The Moth, which is pretty popular. They have a podcast, and they do events all throughout the country. And there is monthly events here in Portland. A lot of them are held at Holocene. So got there, wasn't sure if I was going to get picked to read, and walked in, and only 7 out of 10 spots had signed up. So I knew for sure I was going to have to get up there and do it. But it was one of the most exciting experiences of my life. It's combining two things that I really love, my writing and my performing. So to get to kind of bring that to a new audience was really cool.
I was going to say, it's obviously had a good effect on you, because you don't sound like someone who had their first live reading 2 months ago.
Yeah, for it sure. Was,
so, Amanda, are you going to...
What is your guys' favorite thing about reading live? I mean, what is your favorite thing? What inspires you, you know?
Does it give you a jolt when you read?
Or? Oh, definitely. I think, yeah, it feels... I mean, for me, in the beginning, writing was just very personal, and so putting it out there... well, I had a blog, but again, you're still, like, removed from your audience, so then to... do a live reading and have the audience right there and kind of react to the pieces is something. And especially because I remember reading one piece at Word Warriors, and someone, I was like, didn't think it was that great of a piece, and someone came up to me and was like just gushing about it. And so, it's pretty cool to have people receive your work and not knowing what's going to like impact them or move them.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like you had mentioned, it's very rare that a writer gets to see how people react to their work. So to be in a room of people and to hear kind of where they laugh or, it's fun when you get to hear like a sort of sound in the audience.
Yeah,
that's really cool that you know that a line really hit and stuck with them. I'd say that, and also just I think that your writing gets to come alive when you're kind of at the helm and you're getting to, you know, revive these characters and their voices and the language. And it's, I mean, just listening to some of my fellow readers here, kind of the cadence is so beautiful of their writing. So those are things that are harder to witness on the page.
Yeah. And for me, it's always been like an experience where your writing almost becomes like a physical act that way when you're reading live. And so I always felt like I better understood why I was writing when I read live.
And I definitely agree. Like with me, it's just all the excitement goes into my piece, and then that nervousness just kind of goes away, and it brings out the full piece. And like Grace said earlier, it's just when you have people come up to you and say, man, that really touched me, or I understand where you're coming from, or I've experienced that. That is, like, for me, the biggest thing of why I continue to write and definitely share a lot of, like, my personal truths is because there's so many people out there that experience similar things.
So, Andrea, do you want to read your next piece?
Absolutely. This is a short one. This is a poem titled Baby Love. When I was young, I loved, or thought I loved, a skim milk skinned bean pole of a blonde boy with a pointy nose and spiked hair that could draw blood. A gusano de queso, my mother called him. Cheese worm. But I loved him, or thought I loved him, with abandon. 8 years I fell asleep to the fantasy of walking down a long marble aisle of a candlelit cathedral where he'd be waiting, choked up on the tears that welled in his baby blue eyes. I knew the names of our kids, Hayden, Sophia, Fiona. I can picture the curl of the Q that I would make when beginning his name. I inscribed it 37 times in one sitting. I was a little crazy. But how else could I release the swells of devotion than through acts of art, through artifacts, through the curation of this relationship that did not exist? I kept a little red bouncy ball he gave me and wrote my initials and the rubber so everyone would know it was mine. I kept a necklace with a question mark pendant, his secret name, a constant symbol sitting atop my beating heart. I kept the crumpled orange wristband from the retreat where I drank too much Dr. Pepper and my leg cramped up, but he sat with me and he let me squeeze his hand until the pain faded away. I kept thinking of him because how could I not? I loved him, or I thought I loved him, because now love is different. It is timid. It is close to the chest. It is kept in, not let out. It is maybe this guy on that one app that lives conveniently close by. It is a boy by a brunch spot with a good enough job and a 401k. It is practical. It is sane. It is casual. It is cool. But honestly, is it better?
I totally visualize Billy Idol when you were describing him.
So, this is Amanda Hellstrom White, and you're listening to KBOO, and this is Talking Earth. And our reader next is, again, Grace.
This is called Missing Childhood Innocence. I'm not sure I can pinpoint the exact moment when the innocence of youth slipped through my fingers. I can tell you those times when I felt overwhelmed by what I was facing, thinking I am no longer a child. I can tell you that it feels heavy, weighty, those moments of realization, like a heavy cloak of responsibility, of consciousness bestowed upon the shoulders. Once out of the cave, Socrates tells us, the return is difficult. It is not the same place you left. You are not the same person as before. Both consonance and dissonance happens, and a longing for more wistful and carefree times, a longing for that sweet and blissful state of ignorance. Now it is gone. You cannot go back. Once you know, you cannot unknow or unsee or unlearn. Now there's a responsibility that comes with the knowing. There are things to be taken care of. The world is bigger than just you or I. We all lose it at some point, our innocence. For the lucky ones, it is years on. They get to revel in their childhoods, perhaps for too long or just long enough. For the unlucky ones, it is far too early. They have witnessed so much in tender years of age. It's as if they never had a childhood to begin with. I wanted to grow up fast, to take on the vestiges of adulthood when I was still a child. What a privilege it is to desire such a thing. Now, I only wish I could go back to those simpler times. I am envious of my young nieces and nephews. May they and all children grow up with a childhood and do not lose that sense of wonder too early or take on adult responsibility too soon.
It's really hard to not clap, you know? And, I know we would mess with the sound.
It's okay.
Nastasia, you ready?
Mm-hmm. So this piece is inspired by Billy Weather's song, Grandma's Hands, and it's just a short piece, and it's for my grandmother. So, Grandma's hands clapped in church on Sunday mornings. Grandma's hands played the tambourine so well. Grandma's hands used to issue out a warning. She said, Stasha, don't you run too fast. You might trip on a piece of glass. There might be snakes there in the grass. Grandma's hands. The same hands that worked in the cotton and pea fields. The same hands that slaved over the stove, canning food so that we could have something to eat. The same hands that sold skirts and dresses so that we could have clothes to wear. The same hands that sat us between her laps and washed and greased our hair. The same hands that grabbed my face and told me to never give up. The same hands that couldn't write and eyes that couldn't read, but she never stopped trying. The same hands that pray for us every night. The same hands that prayed for us every night. The same hands that fought tooth and nail to live. The same hands that didn't recognize my hands at the end stage. The same hands that laid across her chest on the last days. Those are the hands that are covering me today. Grandma's hands.
And Andrea?
Sorry.
I wasn't paying attention. I was listening, but I wasn't watching.
Do you have another one to read before I get to Andrea?
Yeah. Yes. Sorry. Bad host. No cookie.
You can have a cookie, but not right now.
I was listening, but I wasn't watching. Because I was listening.
And my next one is called He Walks and I Stand. 5:30 comes before the alarm goes off. This is an everyday occurrence. Allowing me to write and read before the thoughts of the day are jaded by the thoughts of the world. Flipping through the clothes on the floor to find the unworn shirts and pants to fit the day, excited about what's to come, will come, or what has already came. He walks, I stand. 7:30 meetings every day seem to be the norm. What is normal nowadays? Why are there norms? Because we have outdated the latest things they call to be true. If not me, then you. Time seems to go by slowly when life continues to move fast. It passes in a blink of an eye. Don't miss it. Don't cry. The words engraved on my heart, I not only have to be strong, but also smart. He walks. I stand. I need to look nice for this night. A little unchaste is right. They write, we write, I speak, but no one stands. Every person has a phone in their hand recording the injustice of this black man. The bus ride passes as my heart drops to my stomach. I can't stomach this. I need to get off. Let me off. Let me see. Let me be close to this man who looks like me. He walks. I stand. I walk through the crowd and see the 15 police with their guns drawn on this 5'8 light brown man. With no gun in his hand or his waist, my face is heated from the disgrace of our race because everyone has a phone in their hand. I can't stand the sight of this. There's something not right about this. As I walk past the three white people recording, I stood only a few feet away from the black man to make my presence say, I'm here too. He walks, I stand. Out of the corner of my eye, I see this white guy making his way across the street. Headphone in as if this is just another normal day. He walks through the crowd of cops and they had to put their guns away, only for them to draw them again when he walked through. Dear white man with the headphones, I saw you. I really saw you. Thank you. He walks, I stand. He walks, I stand. The police say go the other way and don't come towards us. The black man backed away, his way is towards me. I look at him and I say, I'm sorry, my brother, deeply. And with a nod of his head, I understood the language. And I can only think that if the white man wouldn't have walked and I wouldn't have stood, then that man would have been just another black man shot down in Portland, Oregon's neighborhood. He walks, I stand. Afterwards, I text my sister and brother and waited anxiously for their replies. My sister sent back in all caps, OMG, with crying emoji eyes. Are you okay? Please, please tell me you're safe. My brother is an officer, so he's no stranger to that world. He said, I'm glad you're okay, but it sounds as if those officers handled the situation the wrong way. He walks, I stand. I said, I wanted to reach for my phone to video this and show you, but I was afraid they would shoot. And with sad emoji eyes, he said, sis, you did the right thing because they definitely would have shot you. This can't continue to go on. This type of injustice is so wrong. Why can't we bond together and be strong for each other? I finally ended with apologies to my sister and brother because I'm willing to stand in the midst of fire and lose my life to stand with another. He walks, I stand. He walks, I stand. He walks, I stand. And if you walk, I'll stand too.
Andrea, are you ready?
Yes. Okay, this is called Rivals. When you think of the term arch nemesis, you probably don't think of 5-year-old girls. But that is how old I was when I met my arch nemesis, Kelsey Green. This girl was the absolute antithesis of me. Here I am, a short, fiery, brunette Latina, and Kelsey was a tall, very white, very blonde ice queen. Think Tilda Swinton if she wore Abercrombie and had a childhood, because I'm pretty sure Tilda came out of the womb as a 42-year-old elf person. For 10 years, Kelsey and I shared a classroom. We shared an intimate group of friends. We even shared a carpool. Now, take a moment and imagine Batman and the Joker having to deal with each other's shit for 8 hours and then having to get into Batman's mom's car, attempting to ignore each other's existence for an extra 30 minutes. It's awkward. And what was so bad about the fact that we were around each other so often was that the competition was constant, down to the most minute things like who could take notes faster. I still, to this day, write in a bastardized cursive that's somewhere between Comic Sans and Wingdings. And it didn't stop at school. We competed in extracurriculars, too. I remember the one season of soccer we played together. Every time she scored a goal, I'd have to score one more goal. And I did. I scored 40 goals that season. It was a career highlight. And of course, you can't have a female rivalry without boys. I was so excited when I got my first boyfriend in eighth grade. His name was Ryan, and he was the Avril Lavigne skater boy type who probably had never actually ridden a skateboard in his life. But I could hardly live in my excitement because before I knew it, Kelsey Green had a boyfriend too. Ryan's best friend, who everyone in Hennepin County, Minnesota knew was in the closet. But it didn't matter. I had a boyfriend, so Kelsey had to have one too. And the most frustrating thing about this rivalry is that it could have, poof, disappeared into thin air if I had just stopped caring for a second. But that's the thing about a rivalry, is that it's a contract that you write with yourself that states, I will hate this person until I die, or until they die, and if they die first, you can still hate them, just do it respectfully. I haven't seen this girl in 11 years, but just a couple of weeks ago, I was possessed enough to stalk her on LinkedIn. You know it gets bad when you're stalking someone's LinkedIn. That's last resort stalking, just above researching someone's Venmo history. She works at Tesla now, FYI. She was always better at math than I was. Even though I got the math award over her in seventh grade, I knew she was always better. And I wonder if she checks on me every now and then and obsesses over me the way I have over her. I wonder if she drinks a bunch of rosé with her friends and talks about how it was bullshit that I got the math award and look at her now. She works at Tesla making six figures building the world's most sentient cars. I wonder if she gets jealous that I made it to Portland, cool hipster Mecca, and she lives in Reno, Nevada, aka where Vegas ballers go to raise their family and their secret family. Or I wonder if she's read some of my writing and whispered to herself when no one else was around, damn it, she is funny though. I honestly hope she does. Is that bad? I really hope she does. Because as much as I hated her, Kelsey Green helped mold me. She helped make me into the competitive, scrappy, bold individual I am today. And I won't pretend that it doesn't still hurt to know that objectively, people might find her more attractive or more successful than me. But that sting pales in comparison to the simple fact that I like my life. So I guess I should thank her for helping me get here. But I won't, because I hate that bitch.
You're making it so hard for us to not crack up.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's an awful thing. Just awful.
I'm in pain physically from holding in all that laughter.
So what we want to ask next is if you guys have anything that you want to promote.
Any upcoming shows?
Or books or anything like that.
Nastasia, do you have any shows coming up?
No, I don't have any shows coming up, but please be looking out for my collection that I'm working on, and hopefully I can get it out sooner than later.
Do you have a proposed title yet?
Yes, it's going to be titled Naked, the rhythm and groove to it, the depth and length of it.
by me.
So,
I don't have any upcoming readings. I did make it a New Year's resolution to publish something in 2018, so I've yet to do that, but figure that out. Yeah. And I feel like I have enough material now to put something out there, so.
We will gently nudge you.
Still. All right, great.
Andrea, you want to tell us when the next of the story slams or whatever you're working on next is?
So I will be attending another Moth Story Slam on November 20th. I believe it is, again, at Holocene. There are other Moth events happening, I believe, before that as well, so check it out. I'm also going to be published in a literary journal, a local one here called Buckman Journal. Yes, super excited about that. Not sure exactly what the date is, but I would imagine it's likely before the end of the year. So it's sold at Powell's. It's a really cool journal. If you want to go and pick up, you know, the copy that's out today, I highly recommend. Some really cool local art and writing.
Everyone keep an eye out for that. Yeah.
And just to do a little bit of other promotion, both Sophia and I are going to be published in the Unchased, the third anthology of the Unchased Readers. Are you going to be in it too?
Yes.
And Nassaja is going to be in it too. That's going to be coming out in Kickstarter. The Kickstarter campaign just launched for that, and you can find it if you look up Unchased on the Kickstarter. you can get your copy of that.
We were so prepared for that.
I know, sorry. But it'll be coming out soon, and that'll be great. And we thanks very much, Patrick, our board operator.
And you're very welcome.
And everybody for listening, and very much to our readers tonight. It was great having you. And hopefully we'll be back hosting. So,
but you still have 3 minutes.
Oh,
left.
Do we still have 3 minutes? Oh,
and,
my God!
And the next host is still in the
Patrick,
room recording the show.
Patrick, is there anything you would like to say to Radioland?
You're listening to KBL Portland, 90.7 in your FM dial. The next host is poking me in the back. So we may be starting sooner than I thought, or he may be starting sooner than I thought. I'd like to thank our guests tonight and our new hosts, Sophia and Amanda Helstrom White, and Nastasha Minto. I will fix your name on the website. Sorry about that.
Thank you.
And Andrea Gonzalez and Grace Baddock. And I just butchered someone's name, didn't I? We have time for really short poems, if that's possible.
Does somebody have a really short poem?
Or blather?
Well, I can keep blathering, nice. But I don't know what to blather about. Guess I could self-promote. My new book is going to be coming out this year. It's called Dear Asshole on the Bus and Other Rantings of an Angry Panda. Will be out by the end of the year, so that's exciting news.
It'll be illustrated.
I was just gonna say that I was actually I think I'm one of the people you gripe about.
Are you really?
I have to admit, I actually will leave my book bag on the seat next to me, because I'll get on the bus in Beaverton and no one will be on there, and then get downtown and it's time to cram on, and I'll have my cat litter and my so I'm that jerk.
I'm that guy. Wow.
I think I actually one of your rants on Facebook I actually posted underneath. I'm sorry, Amanda. And I meant it.
Oh, well, that's good to know. So this has been a great debut reading for us, and we're looking forward to it doing it again, so hopefully.
All right. Well, I guess that's going to be it for this edition of Talking Earth, unless anyone else has anything else to chime in.
Special shout out to Maggie Iow, who wasn't able to make it, but she actually introduced us to Andrea.
Yes.
And was introduced to us by Grace, so she's kind of our missing link. So thank you to her, and we hope she's listening, and hope to have her at one of the shows soon.
Yep. Thanks, everybody. And again, you're listening to KBOO and Talking Earth. Thanks very much.
And you're listening now. Stay tuned for Gremlin Time.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution gives one answer to the question, what happens when the community you need is not the community you have? Queer Core shows the development of the movement through the rise of artists who used radical queer identity to push back equally against gay assimilation and homophobic culture. The film features Bruce LaBruce, G.B. Jones, John Waters, Tom Jennings, Team Dresch, and many more. Again, that's the screening of Queer Core, How to Punk a Revolution, on Sunday, October 21st, 7:30, at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center in Portland. Food for the Soul is a potluck in the park benefit and will feature performances by Tom Grant, Michael Allen Harrison, Norman Sylvester, Shelley Rudolph, and Julia McKay. Potluck in the Park has been serving weekly meals every Sunday to anyone in need since 1991. Again, that's Food for the Soul on Saturday, October 20th from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Tiffany Center, 1410 Southwest Morrison Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.